Today is Thursday, January the 8th, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. ICE murder in Minneapolis. Trump's war comes home. By the Socialist Equality Party. The murder of Renee Nicole Good by an agent of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, Wednesday morning in Minneapolis, was a deliberate, daylight execution. The unnamed agent, one of thousands deployed in the city, fired three shots at point-blank range into the face of the 37-year-old woman, a poet, U.S. citizen, and mother of three, as she tried to drive away from a mob of federal agents on Portland Avenue on the city's south side. Video evidence shows that Good was gesturing for federal vehicles to pass and was not obstructing any operation. When agents approached her vehicle, she backed up and attempted to drive away. An ICE agent stepped in front of the vehicle and fired a shot through the windshield. As Good steered away, the same agent fired two more shots through the driver's side window at point-blank range. After the shooting, agents refused to allow a physician to administer aid, blocked the ambulance from accessing the scene, and violently suppressed community members and journalists who had gathered. The site of the murder was barely a mile from the location where George Floyd was choked to death by a Minneapolis cop in May 2020, touching off mass international protests against police violence. Like Floyd's death, the killing of Renee Good was recorded by dozens of bystanders, who screamed in shock and outrage and denounced the ICE thugs as murderers. Trump administration officials have responded with a torrent of lies aimed at denying what millions of people know from watching the videos on social media. The fascist Stephen Miller and Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem denounced Good as a domestic terrorist. Trump issued a statement claiming that the killing was an act of self-defense, asserting in direct contradiction to the video footage that Good violently, willfully, and viciously ran over the ICE officer. The gang of criminals in the White House speaks of the population of the United States with open hatred and contempt. Everyone knew that at some point ICE would kill someone. This was only a matter of time. And Renee Nicole Good will not be the last. Indeed, her death is the intended consequence of the massive paramilitary mobilization that the Trump administration has unleashed in cities across the country, the spearhead for the broader conspiracy for dictatorship. The state murder in Minneapolis comes only 4 days after US commandos stormed into Caracas, Venezuela, seizing the country's president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife, and killing scores of Venezuelans in the process. There is a direct connection between the international gangsterism of the Trump administration and the murder of an American citizen in the streets of a major city. The World Socialist website wrote in its statement on the attack on Venezuela, "To impose neocolonial domination abroad, the administration must also overcome mass opposition at home. The inevitable disasters flowing from this strategy will be met with even greater violence, both internationally and within the United States." This warning is now confirmed in the streets of Minneapolis. The Trump administration is seeking to use the Western Hemisphere as the base for projecting military force against the major rivals of American imperialism around the world: China, Russia, Iran, and the European imperialist powers as well. Trump tweeted, only hours after the murder of Renee Good, that he wants to raise the military budget by 50% this year to $1.5 trillion. That will require even more drastic cuts in social benefits, from education and healthcare to social security. Such policies cannot be imposed democratically. That is why Trump is pouring money into the Department of Homeland Security, the DHS, and its Gestapo-like paramilitary forces, ICE and Customs and Border Protection, the CBP, with plans to double the capacity of migrant detention facilities that are concentration camps in all but name. And such measures will be taken not just against immigrants, but against all opposition from workers and youth. The United States is in the midst of an unfolding coup organized by the sitting president to establish a dictatorship. Responding to the ICE murder, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey described the justifications of the Trump administration as bullshit and said that the White House is seeking to establish conditions in which they can create a military occupation in our city. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz acknowledged the danger of a full-scale federal military intervention into the state. He said he had notified the Minnesota National Guard to be ready for a deployment order in the event that the more than 2,000 federal agents sent into his state were not removed, while declaring, "We've never been at war with our federal government." But he clearly implied that the federal government was at war with Minnesota. He urged those outraged by the ICE murder to avoid violence, saying, "Minnesotans, don't take the bait. Do not allow them to invoke the Insurrection Act. Do not allow them to declare martial law." But this is what the Trump administration is doing. The Democrats counsel restraint in the face of a developing dictatorship, as if the White House will stop its criminal conspiracies if only the population does nothing to provoke it. Walz himself announced this week that he was abandoning his own re-election campaign, capitulating to, and indeed promoting, the slanders and lies directed at Somali immigrants in the Twin Cities. The Democratic Party will do nothing to defend the democratic rights of the American people. It refused to hold Trump accountable for his first attempted coup d'etat on January 6, 2021, and its right-wing, pro-corporate policies opened the door for Trump to return to power 4 years after he sought to shred the US Constitution. There are clear class reasons for this impotence. The Democrats, like the Republicans, are a party of the capitalist ruling elite, upholding the global interests of American imperialism and the domestic rule of the financial oligarchy. Anger is mounting throughout the country, and protests have already been organized throughout the US against the ICE murder in Minneapolis. The aim of protests cannot be to appeal to the very gangsters who are orchestrating these crimes to change their policies. The fight to defend democratic rights must be rooted in the working class, the social force that has the power, and whose class interests correspond to oppose the oligarchy and its rampage against democratic rights. The Socialist Equality Party calls for those protesting the murder of Good to advance clear and uncompromising demands, including the immediate arrest and prosecution of all those responsible for the murder of Renee Nicole Good, the withdrawal of all ICE, CBP and DHS forces from Minneapolis and every other city, the abolition of these Gestapo agencies that terrorize immigrant communities, the immediate release of all detainees held in ICE custody, and an end to all raids, renditions and deportations, full legal rights and protections for all immigrant workers and their families. These demands cannot be realized except through mass social struggle. The logic of events is moving inexorably toward a general strike against the Trump regime, a mass coordinated intervention by workers across every industry to bring the machinery of repression and exploitation to a halt. It should be recalled that Minneapolis was the site of the historic 1934 general strike, in which workers confronted and defeated a brutal campaign of corporate and state repression. When police opened fire on striking Teamsters, killing Henry Ness and John Bellore, workers responded by organizing armed defense squads, sweeping the streets and forcing back the police. The general strike sparked a wave of insurrectionary class battles throughout the country, including the sit-down strikes 3 years later. The unions, like the Teamsters built in those great class battles, have long since decayed into nothing more than bureaucratic shells, which serve the corporations, not the workers. But the great class-divided American society not only remains, it has widened to an unprecedented dimension. The working class requires new forms of organisation to provide a base for mass resistance to the ruling class program of dictatorship and war. The Socialist Equality Party proposes the systematic development of working class rank and file committees in factories, workplaces, logistics hubs, schools, hospitals, and neighbourhoods. Such organisations can break the grip of the corporatist union bureaucracy, unify struggles across industries, regions, and national borders, and defend immigrants and other groups targeted for political repression. Trump has said he will rule as a dictator, and his government acts as a criminal mafia against both the people of Venezuela and other countries overseas, and against the American people at home. The Trump administration acts and speaks as the political representative of a capitalist oligarchy that has elevated him to power precisely because its interests can no longer be secured through legal or democratic means. The fight to defend democratic rights cannot be separated from the fight against this oligarchy and the capitalist system it defends. Every basic right, freedom of speech and protest, the right to live and work without fear of state violence or deportation, the right to health care, housing, education, and a decent standard of living, stands in direct conflict with the social order based on exploitation and private profit. The only viable path forward is the building of an independent political movement of the working class for socialism. Trump seizes Russian-flagged tanker, plunders Venezuelan oil, threatens to attack Greenland. By Andre Damon. In the aftermath of Saturday's US attack on Venezuela and the kidnapping of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, the Trump administration has unleashed a global looting operation, seizing a Russian-flagged tanker on the high seas in a standoff with the Russian Navy, announcing the plunder of billions of dollars in Venezuelan oil, and categorically asserting that a military attack on the territory of NATO ally Denmark to seize Greenland is an option. On Wednesday, US forces seized two more oil tankers, bringing to four the total number of vessels now in US custody. The tanker seizures are part of an ongoing campaign of blockade and war aimed at the domination of Venezuela and Latin America as a whole by US imperialism. In mid-December, Trump ordered a total and complete blockade of all oil tankers under US sanctions from entering or leaving Venezuela. Wednesday's seizures involved two vessels, the Russian-flagged Marinera, intercepted in the North Atlantic south of Iceland, and the Sofia, a tanker operated by a Chinese company seized near the Caribbean. The seizure of the Marinera marked a dramatic escalation of the US-Russia conflict, with US Special Operations forces boarding the tanker while a Russian Navy ship and submarine were escorting it. While a direct clash with Russian warships was avoided, the seizure was carried out as a major military operation, involving the Army's 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, known as the Night Stalkers, supported by P-8 Poseidon submarine hunting aircraft, F-35 jet fighters, and AC-130J gunships. The Marinera, formerly known as the Bella One, had been fleeing the US blockade for 2 weeks, after repelling an initial boarding attempt in December. During its flight across the Atlantic, the ship changed its name, painted a Russian flag on its side, and registered with Russia. But none of this deterred the US military. No state has the right to use force against vessels duly registered under the jurisdiction of other states, Russia's transport ministry said. On Tuesday, Trump announced that Venezuela would give the US between 30 million to 50 million barrels of oil, up to 15% of the country's annual production, valued at between $1.5 billion and $2.5 billion. This oil will be sold at its market price, and that money will be controlled by me as President of the United States of America, Trump wrote on Truth Social. Energy Secretary Chris Wright said Wednesday the US would sell Venezuelan oil indefinitely. we're going to market the crude coming out of Venezuela. First, this backed up, stored oil, and then indefinitely, going forward, we will sell the production that comes out of Venezuela into the marketplace, Wright said at a Goldman Sachs conference in Miami. He added that the US would bring in American oil companies to rebuild Venezuela's infrastructure. Trump has issued threats against Venezuela's interim president, Delcy Rodriguez, who assumed office Monday after Maduro's abduction. If she doesn't do what's right, she is going to pay a very big price, probably bigger than Maduro, Trump told The Atlantic on Sunday. Politico reported that US officials have demanded Venezuela halt oil sales to Russia, China, and Iran. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said Wednesday, Trump reserves the right to use the United States military if necessary. She added, we obviously have maximum leverage over the interim authorities in Venezuela right now. Vice President J.D. Vance told Fox News, the way that we control Venezuela is we control the purse strings, we control the energy resources, and we tell the regime, you're allowed to sell the oil so long as you serve America's national interest. In a statement of criminal intent to wage war against a nuclear-armed power, Leavitt declared the United States is prepared to use military force against the European Union to seize Greenland, an autonomous territory of EU member Denmark. She said acquiring Greenland is a national security priority, and that utilizing the US military is always an option. White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller said Monday the formal position of the United States is that Greenland should become American territory. Nobody's going to fight the United States militarily over the future of Greenland, Miller sneered. His wife posted an image of the American flag superimposed on a map of Greenland with the caption, Soon. The threats against Greenland have deepened tensions between the United States and Europe. Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen said a US action on Greenland would be the end of NATO. On Tuesday, leaders of France, Germany, Italy, Poland, Spain, and Britain issued a joint statement declaring that Greenland's future is a matter for Denmark and Greenland, and them only. On Wednesday, the Danish Defence Ministry confirmed to the newspaper Berlingske that a 1952 directive requiring soldiers to immediately counterattack invading forces remains in force. The directive states that the attacked forces must immediately take up the fight without waiting for or seeking orders, even if the commanders in question are not aware of the declaration of war or state of war. The seizure of oil tankers on the high seas, acts of piracy under international law, and the imposition of a blockade constitute acts of aggressive war, precisely the crimes which Nazi leaders were prosecuted at Nuremberg. Democrats have centered their criticisms of Trump's action on procedural issues. Following Senate hearings on Wednesday, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer lamented, "We need answers as to how long this is going to last. We need answers to how many troops, how much money, are there guardrails, things we don't do, and a number of things that we had talked about were very troubling." Last month, Schumer stated his agreement with the necessity for some sort of regime change in Venezuela. "Obviously, if Maduro would just flee on his own," he said, "everyone would like that." The Democratic Party leadership has categorically refused to condemn the kidnapping of Maduro. Schumer responded to the attack on Venezuela by declaring that Maduro is an illegitimate dictator, while Hakeem Jeffries declared, "he's a bad guy." In December, Democrats joined Republicans in passing a record $895 billion military budget, providing the funds for the very operations now being carried out. Europe on brink of war with Russia and America at Paris Summit. By Alex Lantier. On January 6, European leaders met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky for a war summit in Paris, joined by Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney and two of the Trump administration's Russia negotiators, Steve Witkoff, and Trump son-in-law, Jared Kushner. The assembled NATO officials issued an open-ended commitment to stationing troops in and arming Ukraine as a military base on Russia's borders once a ceasefire is reached. As the Kremlin went to war to prevent just such a situation and has threatened to fire on NATO troops arriving in Ukraine, this makes a mockery of US-European claims to be trying to negotiate with Russia to end the war. Rather, the Paris Declaration is goading Russia to continue the war, potentially setting the stage for its escalation into a total war across Europe. The elephant in the room, however, was Trump's blatantly illegal invasion of Venezuela, and the explosive conflicts building between Washington and its NATO allies, as Trump threatens to seize Greenland from Denmark. The summit's underlying atmosphere was extremely tense, the BBC reported, as Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen sat across Witkoff and Kushner. Frederiksen was, the BBC added, under pressure from European colleagues not to antagonise the US over Greenland, in case that impacts US support for Ukraine. Capitalism, as twice in the 20th century, is plunging into world war that can only be stopped by the working class. Even the NATO powers' nominally diplomatic initiatives at the summit, like the seven-country European statement warning Washington over Greenland, reflected rising fears of a war among nominal NATO allies, which they could not stop. The task of averting a catastrophic military escalation falls to the working class. In a struggle to rise up and take power out of the hands of the representatives of the capitalist oligarchy. The summit's ostensible focus was issuing the Paris Declaration, which calls for NATO countries to continue arming Ukraine and for European troop deployments to Ukraine, coordinated with Washington, at the risk of provoking total war with Russia. We stand ready to commit to a system of politically and legally binding guarantees that will be activated once a ceasefire enters into force, it states. However, the Paris Declaration does not give any timetable or specific plans, or make any commitment to do so. It states that the signatories can be ready to commit to this in future, after a ceasefire is negotiated, if it can be done, in accordance with our respective legal and constitutional arrangements. It calls to send a multinational force for Ukraine, once a credible cessation of hostilities has taken place. It proposes to establish a proposed US-led ceasefire, monitoring, and verification mechanism, a US-led agency that would be headquartered in Paris. It also calls to make binding commitments to support Ukraine in the case of a future armed attack by Russia, as well as plans to deepen long-term defense cooperation with Ukraine. As they issued these threats against Russia, however, seven European powers represented at the summit, Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Poland, Spain, and Denmark, also issued a joint statement on Greenland. While a statement fawningly hailed Washington as an essential partner, even as the Trump administration illegally invades Venezuela and threatens to rule the country and seize its oil, it was unmistakably aimed at US war threats against Denmark. Recalling that the Kingdom of Denmark, including Greenland, is part of NATO, and calling for upholding the principles of the UN Charter, including sovereignty, territorial integrity, and the inviolability of its borders. The statement declared, Greenland belongs to its people. It is for Denmark and Greenland, and them only, to decide on matters concerning Denmark and Greenland. The statement is marred by one evident fatal weakness. It relies on invocations of international law and NATO solidarity to deter Washington from seizing Greenland. But the Trump administration's invasion of Venezuela and its threats to use force against Denmark reveal its contempt for both international law and the NATO alliance. Commentary after the Paris summit was, however, largely dominated by continued threats of military action against Russia, while the far-right Italian government issued a statement that it would not deploy troops to Ukraine. Leaders of several other major European powers described their plans for potential future troop deployments against Russia should a ceasefire be reached. "We will participate in the regeneration of the Ukrainian army," Macron said on the France 2 TV evening news as the summit ended. "Thousands of soldiers could be deployed to keep the peace in Ukraine after a ceasefire," he said. "This will be in the context of our foreign military operations, and it will be organized," he declared, reiterating a pledge to send troops to Ukraine, as he has repeatedly made in the face of overwhelming popular opposition in France and across Western Europe ever since 2024. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer outlined even more detailed promises to station thousands of UK and French troops on Ukrainian soil, ready to fight Russia once a ceasefire is reached. "This is a declaration of intent to deploy forces to Ukraine in the event of a peace deal. This is a vital part of our iron-cast commitment to stand with Ukraine for the long term," he said. The signing of the declaration paves the way for the legal framework to be established for French and UK forces to operate on Ukrainian soil. "Alongside our plans for a coordination cell, post-ceasefire, the UK and France will also establish military hubs across Ukraine to enable the deployment and build protected facilities for weapons and military equipment to support Ukraine's defensive needs." German Chancellor Friedrich Merz told the press that Berlin's plans could include, for example, deploying forces for Ukraine in neighbouring NATO areas after a ceasefire. He added that the German government and parliament would decide on the extent of German military activity once the conditions of a hypothetical Russian-Ukrainian ceasefire were known. "We do not exclude anything in principle," Merz said. Like the Greenland statement, this Russia policy is torn apart by staggering contradictions. No one in the European ruling circles explains how or when a ceasefire could be negotiated for their plans to go into effect, or why Moscow's calls for Ukraine to be a neutral buffer state between it and the NATO powers are unacceptable. They could say, "We pressed Ukraine to fight Russia, counting on a Ukrainian victory, which we hope to use to rape and plunder Russia like Trump wants to rape and plunder Venezuela. Things didn't go according to a plan. Ukraine suffered millions of casualties and is being defeated, but we found it easier to lie to you about it. Demonizing Moscow was a great excuse to cut social spending and rearm, and quite honestly, we didn't care how many Ukrainians died. Now, somehow, it turns out the United States may declare war on us, but trust us, we have more great ideas coming." This would be too much honesty to expect from Europe's governments, however. They are pressing ahead with planning of military escalation against Russia and trying to keep Washington at the center of their war plans in Europe, despite explosive US-Europe tensions as Trump threatens to split the NATO alliance and take military action against European countries. Stopping the war requires the political mobilization of the working class, building a movement against imperialist war among workers and youth, aiming to take power out of the hands of capitalist governments and the financial oligarchies they defend. This means fighting to unite workers in Europe, Ukraine, Russia, the Americas, and beyond, in a struggle for socialism. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.